dynamic duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My very special guest today is JD, an MBA, and the founder of ProjectVoteCount.com, and I'm very eager to talk with him about why the election wasn't stolen yesterday. In my opinion, this is a great event for the American people and for the world, and it has all kinds of positive significance. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Mark Adams. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and you've been doing so much good work. Seems to me you have been an activist in many different areas, and none, in my opinion, more important than election integrity.
Well, I'd have to agree with you there. You know, if our elections are not fair, then we have lost the power to overthrow our government through civil means. And, of course, the next resort is not civil.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, right up to the calling of the states and so forth, I was relatively convinced that they were going to use this same deceptive methods of transferring all the data to their tabulators in Tennessee, changing the outcomes, and then sending them back. It was going to be on a much more massive scale because they were going to have to tilt the outcome in six or seven states. Do you see any evidence at this point in time that any of that was done?
Well, I mean, there are, in my opinion, the overall vote is closer officially than I really believe it turned out to be. But I'm still waiting on getting some data back from some of the precincts. We did exit polls at a number of precincts in Florida yesterday, and I'm still waiting to get the data back from most of them. And, you know, it just right now looks like that the vote for Obama may have been shaved a little bit.
Yes.
And
like
now
a couple percent.
Right, a couple percent make it closer, and then that makes it more believable that there wasn't as big a change in Congress because, you know, the probably the only office in the land where there's a lower approval rating than President Bush has is Congress.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, Congress rammed through that big banker bailout bill against the wishes of virtually everyone. And then what we've seen is that, you know, there's right now only about 20 members of Congress who lost re-election, five members of the Senate. And you know, that doesn't seem quite believable to me. And in Florida, actually, the Democrats had negative coattails, okay?
Yep.
So they actually, the Democratic congressional candidates who were challenging Republicans had less votes cast for them than Obama did, if we believe the official count.
Well, that's all very disturbing. How would they have gone about rigging it this way? Would it have had to be state by state or what? I mean, you're getting down into some very particular races when we're at the House level.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there's, as we've seen, there's a variety of tactics used to tamper with elections. Everything from purging people who have registered to vote from the rolls to intimidating them, to distracting them from going to the polls and casting their votes. You know, all the way to what it looked like in 2006 was that they had actually programmed a flip of at least 14% of the votes cast in John Russell's district and Clint Curtis's district to flip them from the Democratic candidate over to the Republican candidate. And so I think that we've seen a few different things. And of course, historically, one of the ways that elections were tampered with was through absentee balloting, because that's the original faith-based voting. You mark an absentee ballot, you put it in the mail, you just have faith that it gets counted and that it gets counted accurately.
And, of course, you didn't mention what Richard Hayes Phillips documents in Witness to a Crime, the actual taking of ballots and changing the vote.
Oh yeah, and I think that's you know, that's historically been documented in a number of contests with absentee ballots, and what we're talking about in Florida in 2006, I mean, we had touch screens and we had OptiScans then, and we saw similar flips in John Russell's district and in Clint Curtis's district. So I mean that shows, in my opinion, that it's a conspiracy to steal votes from the Democrats and flip them to the Republicans, and it includes multiple types of machines made by different manufacturers. So it's not just Diebold.
Yes. Sequoia, SENE, there's several manufacturers,
right,
all of whom have close ties to the Republican Party.
Right, and there's basically three main manufacturers. And Diebold just changed their name to Premier, and then Sequoia and ES&S. And they program the machines, and they treat, they claim the source code's a trade secret. But like you and I have talked on your show before, it's a simple tabulation program, which legally doesn't even qualify as a trade secret. And even if it was legally qualified as a trade secret under the law, it would be discoverable, and you would be able to review it, but just not disseminate the trade secret, but you would be able to report back on the trade secret, on the source code, and whether or not it was written in a way to flip votes.
Of course, the very idea of concealing source code when you're talking about a simple routine for adding a number 1 to an original number n to produce a new number n prime is about as simple a matter of programming as it gets. I mean, there's nothing proprietary whatsoever if it's an honest, straightforward application of the elementary principles of arithmetic.
Right. That's what I agree with you. It doesn't even qualify as a trade secret.
Yeah.
It's too basic.
Yeah.
You know,
so
trade secret
it does, then it must mean that they have something fancy going on, such as a routine for redistributing the vote according to some complicated or uncomplicated formula. I mean, it's always seemed to me so obvious that if you have a certain number of voters, if you simply know who's going to win, all you have to do is reassign the votes to the opposite candidate. It can be that simple, and you have the right total overall vote.
Right. And you know, it is that simple. It's something that, you know, that's one of the things that I'm a little concerned about early voting, because while early voting, you know, does give you more opportunity to vote, it also gives the bad guys more opportunity to figure out. They get a sample from the early voting, and they figure out what they need to steal, and they program that in, and it all happens during the election, which if it was all compressed into one day, it would be much more difficult for them to pull off.
Yes. But, you know, I'm still puzzled, Mark. It seems to me that they were set up to steal this election, and they didn't do it. I mean, they've suppressed it. I'm willing to believe that almost certainly they did that to make the House, for example, stay a little closer to their heart's desire, and yet we may have as many as 270 Democratic members of the House as opposed to about 170 Republican, which is quite substantial control.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Senate, we still have 4 seats apparently yet to be decided, so there could be 8 or 9 changes there, too. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mark Adams, earned a B.A. at the University of South Florida, his law degree and his Master of Business Administration at the University of Florida. He's been active in many, many important issues, including the judicial reform movement, the media reform movement, and the election reform movement. Mark, it strikes me that I was actually teaching at the University, New College of the University of South Florida in Sarasota from 81 to 84, 85.
Wow, that's great. That's a great school. And I didn't go to New College campus. I was at Fort Myers campus and at the Tampa campus. So.
Yeah, New College is like the Honors College for USF. It was really great. We had only 400 students and 40 faculty and narrative evaluations, no grades. Everyone did a thesis. Students designed their own curriculum and with a faculty advisor. It was really terrific.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. And you know, the thing about all my activism, you know, it's come about because, you know, over and over, I've had situations develop where, you know, I'm faced with clear evidence of things that have undermined the very foundations of our government, such as judges ignoring the law and ignoring the facts and throwing cases, because without a judiciary that's accountable, which our judiciary is not accountable right now, then we have no ability to get justice. And we saw that in the election contest from 2006. The judge in the Florida State Court ignored controlling precedent by the U.S. Supreme Court, which said that you could take legal action to get a recount in state court. The judge ignored that in Florida State Court and dismissed the contest, claiming he didn't have jurisdiction. And then in Congress, of course, I've got an article up on Scoop. It's been one of the top scoops. I've had a couple articles on Scoop the last week or two about the 2006 contest. But Congress ignored the Federal Contested Elections Act and dismissed the contest that we brought in 2006 for Clint Curtis and John Russell and Frank Gonzalez. Without even allowing us a hearing, and on a basis that's not even one of the bases upon which they can dismiss a contest under the Federal Contested Elections Act.
What was their standing, Curtis, Russell, and Gonzalez?
Well, they in before Congress, if you are a candidate for congressional office, whether it's House or Senate, there's a specific act. It's 2 U.S.C. 381 at SEC. It's called the Federal Contested Elections Act. And any candidate who has run for a congressional office can file a contest before the House or the Senate, if it's a senator. And basically, the act specifies the grounds for contesting and the grounds for dismissal and
they were all candidates for the House.
They were all candidates for the House in Florida in 2006. And what we did, which was, I guess, sort of unique at the time, since we were dealing with secret votes that had been counted in secret, and some of them, you know, there was no paper trail to look at. I mean, Florida still at the time allowed the touchscreen machines. And so in some of the areas, the only way to figure out what the vote should have actually been was by going and contacting the voters, which is what I, you know, said, let's do this. Let's go contact the voters. Let's get affidavits from them, testifying as to how they voted and, you know, present that as evidence in the Florida case and before the House and ask for either a new election or, you know, whatever relief is appropriate. And we got evidence showing that, once again, at least 14% of the votes in a number of precincts in John Russell's district and Clint Curtis's district, the voters signed affidavits saying they voted for John and Clint. And in a number, it shows at least 14% of those votes did not show up on the official totals for John and Clint, and it wasn't like the Sarasota case, which got more publicity, where there was a 15% undervote, and just a lot of votes disappeared. And in John and Clint's districts, votes didn't disappear. So votes that weren't registered for them obviously were registered for the Republican.
Was this a case where there were electronic voting machines in use?
Oh, yeah. It was all electronic. Florida's been all electronic vote counting for quite some time now. And even the old punch cards that everybody knows from 2000, those were counted electronically. They were counted by an old-fashioned punch card reader.
Was this true even this year? I had heard there were reforms in Florida, and actually that the count this year should have been a whole lot more reliable.
Well, theoretically, I mean, this time, due to the 2006 contest and all the, flack we stirred up, we had a little speech there. We had a rally at the Capitol in March of 2007, and right before that, the legislature had refused to do anything with our election system, but then we had a rally at the Capitol, and the next week they decided to pass a bill which mandated that votes be cast on paper and run through optical scanners. Now, we all wanted some type of check on the secret vote count spit out by the optical scanning computers, but they refused to give any type of audit provision in there. So basically, it was an illusion of a reform, in my opinion, because, people are voting on paper, but it's still being counted by a computer. And, once again, no one is going back to count to make sure that the computer counted accurately.
Don't you think one of the first reforms that ought to be passed by the new Congress would be to insist that all elections be held under uniform requirements and with paper ballots and with hand counting by representatives of the parties?
Well, I think that would be a really good start, and they could certainly do that regarding federal elections. They do have the power to govern federal elections. So, and realistically, if they set a standard for federal offices, most states would probably follow it for all their state offices. And that's the same thing with our contest and, of the 2006 elections. They had an opportunity to use that evidence that we had gathered and show that there was a need for reform and go back to some type of, if they wanted countable optical scan computers, at least audit a reasonable percentage of precincts on election night.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mark Adams, who has a JD and an MBA and is the founder of ProjectVoteCount.com. We're discussing the outcome of the elections and when, whether or to what extent they may have been affected by the abuse of electronic voting machines and optical scanners. Mark, I'm looking on Politico.com at their map, and of course they actually don't have Missouri red yet, but it did go to McCain by something like 0.2%. So the electoral vote with North Carolina still hanging is 346 to 173. North Carolina, Obama's ahead by 0.4%, so I would expect that's going to be called fairly promptly, and that'll add another 15 to Obama's, giving him, 354 to 173. It's quite about a 2-to-1 in the Electoral College count, but as we go through some of the states, we find that there's a very close percentages, including in Indiana, it was Obama 49.9 versus McCain 49, Missouri, which was just, you know, just counted 49.3 to 49.5, New Mexico and some of the others had a little greater separation. Do you think that actually there was like a 2.5 or 3% slant that was introduced pretty much across the board?
Yeah, and I mean it could have been even bigger than that because I mean you look at the turnout. I mean it's the greatest turnout in 100 years.
Yes,
and so we're supposed to believe with this dramatic increase in turnout that a lot of those people were running out to vote for the Republican candidate, who I think Obama did this great, using the ad where John McCain himself is saying he's one of the biggest supporters of George Bush, voting with him 90% of the time.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense that people would turn out in greater numbers than usual to vote for the party that's been in control as
yes.
our economy's been trashed.
Yes.
So, I mean, so I think historically when there's bigger turnout, the bigger turnout usually goes for the party that's out of power.
Yes. And makes it, I take it, a lot more difficult to steal. I mean, if I'm, you know, thinking about all the anticipatory concerns like, you know, Bobby Kennedy and Greg Palast had their piece in Rolling Stone about the election already being stolen. Greg Palast was reporting that in advance of Election Day, 1 million votes had already been siphoned off. I mean, and there were a lot of other indications that what was going on was going to be very bad. I mean, even Oprah's vote was flipped when she went to the polls in Chicago. So I was apprehensive as hell going into this election. I mean, really, my heart was in my throat in the belief that in all probability there was going to be a massive effort to steal it, that if it succeeded it was going to lead to huge public protests in major cities, that they would probably bring out the military to suppress it and possibly suspend the Constitution. I thought the entire future of the nation was at stake here in a very dramatic way, more dramatic even than Obama simply winning the election in the fashion in which he did.
Well, and you're not alone in that thinking, Jim. I mean, I've read several articles and heard from a number of people, and like you mentioned, you know, Greg Palast and Robert Kennedy, talking about the you know, 1 million votes being stolen before the election. I mean, that's mainly concentrating on people improperly purged from voter rolls. People that who were a lot of times registered Democrat, or you know, were the demographic that would more than likely have voted against McCain and for Obama, and I think they definitely gave it a try. But I think what they thought is they thought better of pushing the country to a point where people really rose up, because you know, they've got a lot of control over everything right now. I mean, one thing we need to remember is, you know, Obama voted with Bush on the banker bailout and McCain on the banker bailout. And Obama voted for the retroactive immunity for the violations of FISA.
When you're talking about some things that have distressed me acutely, and he gave a talk to the Israeli lobby talking about our eternal dedication to the well-being of Israel.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's a lot of things that say that Obama is playing on the same side as really everybody in power. And, you know, I without a doubt think that he was a better choice than, McCain. But I just think really the fix was, set up and done, before the primaries even. I mean, if you look at the people who have stood up for, what the American public want in both parties, on the Democratic side, you see Dennis Kucinich, you see Mike Gravel. On the Republican side, you see Ron Paul. You know, Kucinich and Ron Paul were amongst the group that was saying, wait a second on this banker bailout, and pointing out that we need to figure out exactly what the problem is and make sure we, you know, pass a solution that is going to help the people, which, like the Miami Herald series, pointed out a lot of the defaults in the mortgages across our country are due to fraud having been committed by the banks and the mortgage brokers on the American public. And rather than bailing out the people who were victims of fraud, the bill just allows those people to be continually victimized by losing their homes, losing their credit rating, losing their life savings, and the bankers got paid off. And it's outrageous. It's outrageous that anyone who voted for that is in office, in my opinion. And, you know.
Well, I agree with you to a large measure, or I really do. I mean, what's the point of, you know, giving nearly $1 trillion to the financial institutions that were responsible for the calamity in which we find ourselves, especially when simply renegotiating mortgages to make them more reflective of the current assessed valuation of the property is the more obvious solution to the problem by and large.
Right, right. And, but of course, you know, we were, you know, Kucinich was anti-war, Ron Paul was anti-war, but all the other candidates were, pro-war. Now Obama's, you know, changed more in the last 6 months or so to, being more towards pulling out, eventually from Iraq, and I think he's still wanting to send more, wanting to continue the war in Afghanistan and concentrate more forces there. But Kucinich and Ron Paul were both anti-war. At least 70% of the country is anti-war and sees through the Bush BS that got us into this mess. And yet, because of manipulation by the media cartel, they blacked out Ron Paul, they blacked out Dennis Kucinich, and when they did cover them, they tried to, they basically belittled them, you know, made fun of them.
Yes, yes, very disturbing. Stand by, we'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry fields forever.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a dedicated activist in the areas of judicial reform, media reform, and election reform, and we're talking about what happened last night as the culmination of what I guess is a couple of weeks of early voting. Mark Adams, Mark, it's such a pleasure. When you were watching the election last night, I guess you must have been completely absorbed by the results in every state. What was striking, most striking to you as it unfolded?
Well, you know, once again, with record turnouts,
yeah,
the fact that it was as close as it was,
yeah,
just was striking to me.
This is just not right, is it?
No, it just is not right. And also, there were record levels of early voting turnout, too.
Yeah.
And so it was across the board record levels of turnout. And, of course, the people who were concerned about voting early were primarily Democrats, because the Democrats have been the ones who have suffered from being purged illegally.
Yeah.
From voting. And so they were, the Democratic Party and a lot of Democratic-leaning organizations were trying to get people to get out and vote early just to ensure that they were able to cast a ballot at all. And so we see this great increase in turnout.
Without a commensurate reflection in the excess of blue across the board.
Right, right. And now the really absurd thing, and this brings me to my media blackout word of the day, and that blackout word is coattails.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been no talk, and I've watched about 4 or 5 hours of various, you know, CNN, Fox, stuff like that, news coverage, and there's been a little talk about, oh, the Democrats have picked up some seats in the House and picked up a few seats in the Senate, and then there's a few still up in the air, but there's been very little talk about, I haven't heard the word coattails mentioned once. And for the young listeners out there, coattails are what a president carries. Especially when you have a change in who's in power in the presidency, usually they pick up a significant number.
Right. When you have a strong candidate for president, as in the case here with Obama, then because so many more are turning out for Obama, they tend to vote Democratic for the lower tickets, the Senate, the House, and so forth, where the difference between a stronger and weaker candidate at the top is the measure of the strength of the coattails.
Right. And so we think they tweaked the numbers to make it look like Obama wasn't as strong as he actually was. And then in Florida, they went beyond that. In Florida, Obama had negative coattails. So we're supposed to believe in Florida that people went and voted for Obama and then voted for Republican incumbents to send them back to the House.
So they were just trying to forestall the historic dimensions of the transition involved here, where, you know, there'd been talk of this being a generational, something that could last for 50 years, and it's obviously that hasn't quite come to pass.
Well, it could last for 50 years, or it could last forever, as long as we have secret vote counting. We're pretty much at the whim of the people who program the machines.
Yeah.
And so, that's
I wouldn't be surprised if Mitch McConnell, for example, was saved by messing with the tabulated vote. I mean, I would think there would be a few selected cases. But when I'm looking at, you know, with 56 now with 4 seats to be determined and Republicans with 40, if they get close to 60, if they got 59, if they got all 4 of those, which they may well not, they're still getting pretty close to the most optimistic projections, don't you think, for the Senate?
Basically the Senate looks like, I mean, what I've heard is they've definitely picked up 5 seats, and then there's the 4
right
in question. So, there's a possible, I mean, that would be a pretty decent swing in power. I mean, it's not what would be a filibuster proof swing. But
not quite,
once,
yes.
Yeah, but And you know, maybe they, I mean, right now I think they're confirming, I've seen 20 seats picked up in the House being reported by, I think, CNN or MS. I've been flipping around trying to get coverage of this, and there's not that much talk about it, and there's no mention of the word coattails.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've seen some saying 12, picked up in the House with another possible 25 in play still. And just the thing that's really, you know, I've been focusing mainly on Florida, but looking for coverage nationally about this issue. And in Florida, we see across the board that Democratic challengers to Republican incumbents are actually losing worse than they did in 2006.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, except for one. And now, if you wanted to shut people up about election fraud, you would let Obama win, and you would get rid of the one guy that's the poster boy for election fraud. And he's from Florida. And guess who that is? It's Tom Feeney, and he got beat 57% to 41%.
I'm trying to recollect everything about Feeney. He was involved in some deep scandal, was he not?
He is the one who came to the firm that Clint Curtis was a programmer for and asked about.
The guy, yeah. Clint said he'd written a routine to steal the election for Feeney.
Right. And you know, thinking at the time that it was, you know, just so they could figure out how someone might try and do that. But and Clint blew the whistle on it. So, I mean, that's good. But, you know, Feeney loses 41 to 57%. But all over the place in Florida, Democratic challengers lost in general like 60 to 40%.
That's ridiculous.
Could
that be a simple reversal of the actual vote?
That's exactly what I think it is.
Yeah.
And I would not
vote. Votes all go to the Republican candidate and vice versa.
Right. And then you shave some from Obama, so, you know, it looks like the Obama-McCain race was closer than it actually was. And, you know, everybody just, you know, rolls on by thinking, hey, well, you know, Obama won, so it must be fair.
Are you going to write about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good. I think the more the better. And
right.
Do you think it's possible we could get the kind of reforms that I feel are absolutely indispensable to the future integrity of our elections by getting rid of one and all? I guess there are more than a million of these voting machines out there, getting rid of every one of them.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people in election reform that would like to go back, and I'm really one of them. You know, go back to hand-counted paper ballots.
Yes.
And, you know, that way it takes thousands of people to cooperate in a conspiracy to steal a presidential election.
Yeah.
And there are tens of thousands.
Sides party-wise and so forth, and it's extremely improbable that's going to ever come to pass.
Right, exactly. And so... You know, of course, everybody says, oh, well, how about Kennedy in Chicago in, you know, 1960? And of course, you know, people have tried that even back in the old days, rigging elections when they were hand-counted paper ballots. But it's just too easy to steal when you have three companies programming, you know, over 90% of the vote counting machinery.
All with ties to the Republican Party.
All with ties to the Republican Party. And, you know... You know, I don't care which party they have a tie to. I am not happy with secret vote counting. And if you look at U.S. Supreme Court precedent, the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that you have the right to cast a vote and to make sure it's counted accurately.
And, of course, how can you challenge and have a recount if the vote doesn't even exist except in cyberspace?
Oh, yeah.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mark Adams, has degrees in business administration and in the law, which are excellent background for taking a look at the accounting practices we employ during our elections. He's been very active in the judicial reform movement, the media reform movement, and now, of course, the election reform movement. And we're talking about, you know, whether to what extent this election may have been affected by tampering with a vote, suppressing voters and turnout and all that sort of thing. Mark, it's really very disturbing, you know, that they might have wanted to not create the impression that Obama had the massiveness of a mandate that he actually has.
Right, and because if they would have allowed the true count to come through, then they would have had a lot of new people in Congress, and much more so than they are currently allowing to take office. And, you know, once again, in Florida, Obama had negative coattails everywhere except in Tom Feeney's district.
You were also commenting about how a judge had not allowed an action where you were representing candidates who had suffered effects from this from vote manipulation. You weren't able to have your case heard, I take it.
Right.
One of the great concerns I've had is with the extent to which Bush has been systematically purging the judiciary and the federal attorneys of anyone who's remotely objective and committed to the Constitution for the sake of partisan political benefit.
Right. And you know, the problem is our judiciary throughout the nation is out of control, and part of that is because in 1980, 81, I can't remember the exact time, Congress abdicated its responsibility to look into complaints about misconduct by federal judges, and it actually passed a law saying that the federal judiciary was going to hear complaints about itself. And obviously that hasn't turned out very well. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court did a study. It's called the Breyer Study. It was published a couple years ago, and it found that the judiciary, federal judiciary, dismissed about 99% of the complaints about misconduct by federal judges. And misconduct would be ignoring the law, ignoring the facts, violating people's rights. Over 99% dismissed without any type of investigation. And actually, during the period of time from early 80s up until that report in about 2005 or 6, so 25 years, there were only about, I think it was around 20 reprimands of federal judges out of over 10,000 complaints filed. So, you know, absolutely no discipline. I mean, you know, you can't allow the fox to guard the hen house, and that's what's going on with the judiciary right now.
I think it's going to be a real chore to clean that up, even with somebody who's, you know, a principled constitutional scholar. I think we're extremely fortunate to have someone with Obama's background coming into the White House, where at least I think he has the potential to understand exactly the nature of the problems and the range of possible reforms that might be implemented.
Right, and well, you know, part of that is a lot of people don't understand the duties of Congress, and that, you know, certainly since he served 4 years as a senator, he should understand that it's Congress's duty to look into complaints about misconduct by federal judges, and that duty should be restored to Congress, because abdication of that duty to the courts to look into complaints. I mean, that's like saying, hey, Jim and Mark, you guys, if anyone complains about you, we're going to send the complaint to you, and you know, you just take a good look at it and do what you think's right.
Yeah, that's really outrageous.
Yeah, outrageous, and it's led to outrageous injustice. And, you know, it's even worse in a lot of states, like in Florida. Complaints about judicial misconduct go to the Judicial Qualifications Commission, which is made up of judges and connected attorneys, and the complaints filed with them are exempt from disclosure under Florida law, so they're secret complaints, and they routinely ignore about 99% of the complaints filed with them, too.
Sounds really disgusting. I mean, there could be all kinds of financial or sexual or other kinds of misconduct that get completely buried.
Right. You know, the biggest deal is case fixing, and they fix cases in Florida like they do in Mexico, Colombia, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, It's just ludicrous. I mean, there's a just
for all the attorneys involved, or just one side fixes it with a judge, like the prosecutor.
Well, most of the time it's just one side, but you know, sometimes both sides are involved, and you know, a client's being taken for a ride, and then you know, it's really become, you know, I mean, well, here's a great statement from another member of the judicial reform movement, an attorney out of Virginia. He says, there are those who believe in the American justice system and those who have experience with it.
Yeah.
And that is...
to have experience is to no longer believe.
Right. Exactly. If you have experience in America's court system...
If you know what you're talking about.
Right. Then you're going to go, oh, my gosh, this is way wrong. And people are realizing it. People are up in arms about what's going on. I mean, hardly, you know, hardly a week goes by that I don't hear of a protest at some courthouse in Florida. And, you know, it's just outrageous. I mean, children are being taken from their families when, you know, the factual basis is proven to be false. But the, you know, there's a financial incentive to take children, and so unfortunately, under the law, the decision is up to just a judge whether or not to take a child into state custody. There's no jury, although I think our founders would be disgusted by that. I think they certainly intended a jury to sit in any type of situation where your life, liberty, or property was at stake, and your children's liberty can be taken all across America solely upon the decision of a judge who, even when presented with evidence showing that the evidence the state is using is false and fabricated, will still rule for the state and take your children.
That's really terrible.
Oh, it is terrible. For your listeners,
is trafficking children related to that? Then, I mean, for all kinds of abuse, I mean, that's very troubling. You know, you'd wonder why you'd ever want to separate children from their parents unless the circumstances were extreme.
Well, exactly. And if you go to rescuemykids.com, you'll see a website that documents a number of outrageous cases right in the Tampa Bay area.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today has an MBA and a law degree from the University of Florida. He is active in judicial reform, media reform, and electoral reform, and we've been talking about judicial reform. Mark, I'd like to turn to media reform. It seems to me that, you know, the loss of the fairness doctrine, the merging of so many markets where you can have television and radio stations, newspapers, whatever, and the boundless amounts of money that seem to be available to Republicans has given them just virtually unlimited influence through the airwaves upon the American public. And that, you know, the claim that the media is liberal is such a manifest absurdity that I can't imagine why anyone would take it seriously.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely humorous whenever I hear anyone say the liberal media. I'm about to start, you know, almost laugh at them, and because it's just absurd. I mean, the media has been consolidated to the point that they actually tamper with what news gets out to the people, and it's just amazing. That's why I was mentioning the blackout word of the day is coattails. You do not mention coattails. We're pretending they don't exist in politics. And
yeah.
Another example, of course, is the 2006 election contest out of Florida. After initially running a couple slanted articles, you know, trying to belittle the possibility that there could be anything meaningful to the contest by John Russell or Clint Curtis, then the media in Florida went into blackout mode and joined, and you're going to be disgusted by this, the Democratic Party in refusing to talk about the election contest. And once again, we got affidavits from voters showing without a doubt that the official results took at least 14% of the votes from the Democratic congressional contestants and must have flipped them to the Republicans.
14% of the vote. That's
right.
Huge.
Huge. Huge.
And why in God's name were the Democrats joining with the Republicans?
They are bought and paid for by the same people.
This is in Florida. It's the Florida Democratic Party. Was it the National Democratic Party?
Both of them.
Good God.
Right.
How long ago was this, Mark?
this is 2006 election. This, most of this funny business went on in 2007. And
Howard Dean was the chairman of the National Democratic Party, this was taking place?
Yeah, this was taking place then. And, you know, whether or not it ever got to his attention, I mean, we tried to get, I mean, John Russell and I both talked to Karen Thurman, the chair of the Florida Democratic Party, about this, and she admitted to us, she trotted out the typical Democratic explanation of why they're not talking about this issue, and the typical explanation is they're afraid it will scare voters away if they're concerned that the elections are manipulated. And of course, our response to that was, well, if elections are manipulated, what does it matter how many people show up at the polls if they're just picking the winner anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that's a stupefyingly a ridiculous argument. I mean, for God's sake, the point is to conduct elections that are going to reflect the voters' preferences, not to have some stage ceremony where people come in and cast a vote just for the purpose of making them think that they have something to do with the way the country is governed.
Right, and so we kept pressing her on that, and then she finally admitted that they were worried that if they talked about election fraud, people would quit contributing.
Well, that's ridiculous, too. I would think people would be even more offended and more on their high horse and more willing to participate and get involved to clean up the mess.
I agree with you. And you know, doing exit polls, and when we do exit polls, we, Project Vote Count, we use affidavits. We collect affidavits from the voters at the polling place. And we started this back in January with the primaries, and we did them in Florida, Texas, and Ohio. And then we just did them yesterday in Florida. And I think Election Defense Alliance was doing them too, but they were not collecting affidavits. But collecting the information from the voters, people say, a lot of people are aware of the problem already. So they come up and they participate. Some people come up and they start asking questions. And they say, for instance, well, we voted on paper, you know, why should we be concerned about it being counted accurately? And I explained to them that, well, you voted on paper, but the paper is counted by an optical scanner, which is a computer, which counts the vote in secret. And amazingly, at the end of the day, no person is going to go back and look at any of the paper ballots cast here and check to make sure the computer counted accurately. And like you said earlier, you know, why haven't they fixed this? I mean, it's like, you know, kindergarten level, let me see, shouldn't we check a few of those secret vote counts to make sure they're accurate? And there is no explanation in my mind other than they do not want the people to control Congress.
Well, it's obvious to me that the Republicans have a vested interest because, the growing discrepancy between the rich and the poor, which has been accelerating during the Bush years, means basically that the party represents the interests of a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. So if they aren't manipulating the outcome, the probability they're going to be defeated regularly and even more extensively with the passage of time becomes overwhelming.
Right. I mean, when you're shipping American jobs overseas on a wholesale basis, and you've been doing it for a long time, and you're taking us to war based on trumped up reasons and even worse stuff, it would be hard to win fairly, I would think.
Yeah, I think that the influence of the party should be increasingly diminished. I think that, you know, if they're going to have to recast themselves somehow very comprehensively. I mean, God knows they're far removed from the principles that used to define the Republican Party, which include balanced budgets, a non-interventionist foreign policy, constitutional government, keeping the government out of our personal lives and states' rights. I mean, none of those has been upheld by this administration, but then God knows practically no principle of law or the Constitution has been.
Right. And you know, they still preach that same stuff, and that's why many people are members of the Republican Party, is they actually believe the Republican leaders when they say, we're working to keep government off your back and out of your pocketbook.
Yeah, even McCain got back to that as a theme in the end in his desperate effort. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams, Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Mark Adams, has been very active in judicial reform, media reform, and electoral reform. Mark, I must say I recently came across a YouTube entitled Turd Blossom's Insider's Guide to Swinging Elections, which gives a marvelous encapsulation of how election theft takes place in about 5 minutes. I recommend it to everyone out there. Turd Blossom's Insider's Guide to Swinging Elections. It does seem to me that with the Bush administration, we had a degree of corruption that has not been a part of most past administrations in American history, where nothing was policy, everything was politics, and they played hardball without any concern for morality or principle or the Constitution.
Oh, right. And like we were talking about earlier, I mean, you know, people were misled into taking out loans, adjustable rate loans, and are losing their homes. And we're talking about millions of Americans being thrown out into the street. And they complained, and a lot of times they had documents showing that they were misled. Violations of the Truth in Lending Act. And the government did nothing for the people. And, you know, it's just outrageous.
And then we give what I take altogether is over $1 trillion to the bankers and financiers who brought all this about.
Right, right. So, you know, we've got a complete inversion. And what I call our government is it's developed into, instead of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, it's developed into a kleptocracy.
Yes.
Where it's a feudalist kleptocracy. So they're just busy stealing as much of the, you know, middle class.
Even early members who left the Bush administration said that it wasn't administering the law. It was more like looting.
Right.
I mean, that was an early report. You know, most Americans would find that so inconceivable. But it's been going on for a long time now.
Right. It's like when you explain to the people that, hey, you know, your vote's being counted in secret, and no one's bothering to even go back and check the paper to make sure that the secret vote count spit out of the machine is accurate. People can't even imagine that. That's beyond their comprehension, and they're disgusted, and they keep saying, well, why? And that's what I tell them. I say, well, yeah, exactly. Everybody's been telling everybody that in government for the last several years, why aren't our elections, why aren't our votes counted in a much more secure and accurate manner that we can be comfortable with?
Yeah.
And there's only one explanation I can think of, and that's a desire to maintain power no matter what the people want.
Yes, well, I certainly see that with Bush, which is part of the reason why I'm still astonished today that we actually had an election that went forward where it wasn't grand theft right before our very eyes, that didn't lead to those massive public outpouring of concern that the government would characterize, this government, this administration would characterize as riots and, you know, put out SWAT teams. I mean, they were doing this in major cities. They were having, you know, all kinds of preparations for a severe breakdown by heavily armed police on the population if they were to respond to the theft of an election badly. I mean, it was really outrageous to see the plans they were going to implement if Obama lost.
Oh, yeah, and you know, that's the thing. I think certainly they've gotten away with a bunch of stuff, and they've tried some outrageous stuff, but when it comes down to did they want to push us into a situation where there would have been a big uprising, because, you know, fortunately our founders gave us civil means to control the government through elections and through the right to present evidence to grand juries. The bad guys have been working on undermining those for quite a while now. But the founders gave us the Second Amendment because they knew that, you know, it might come to a point in time where the people have to take arms up against their government.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the people who are running the show right now realize that if you push the people to the point where it comes to that, historically what happens when people, an armed populace is pushed to that point,
yeah,
is all the rulers find themselves very dead.
Yeah. That would be a tragic and fateful end for these people, wouldn't it?
Right. And so I think they were at least smart enough not to steal this presidential election.
Well, I thank God they didn't. I also worry tremendously that the military now has these high-tech weapons where they can reduce a car to the dimensions of a damp rag and people to the dimensions of a fetus. These are some kind of directed energy weapon, and they're fearsome, and they have been using them selectively in Iraq to demonstrate to the military how effective they are. Russian general even thought a principal reason why we were going into Iraq was so the military-industrial complex could demonstrate the destructive power of their new generation of weapons to induce the Pentagon to buy them.
Wow. Possibly. I mean, certainly we went in there to make some money for the defense industry and
appropriate their oil.
Right. And to, you know, exert more control over the oil industry and in
the Middle East and, you know, exert American power outward from that geopolitically sensitive area of the world. It's all in accordance with the neocon agenda.
Right. And to convince people in America that we had to worry about them, their terrorists, so we better allow our phones to be tapped and our emails to be read. And you know, if we're not doing anything wrong, everything should be okay.
That's right.
But it's
completely outrageous. I mean, it's an inversion of the principles of the open society and the closed society. In an open society, you're able to do everything that you're not explicitly restricted from doing. In a closed society, you're only able to do those things that the government allows you to do, and we're making that transition.
Right, and you know, Naomi Wolf points that out, you know, all over the place, and it's really been going on, and you know, many people have been watching it and pointing it out for years, and you know, one of my favorite books about What's going on is The Twilight of Democracy by Jennifer Van Bergen, which talks about the Patriot Act and how the Bush administration was just undermining what gives us our very freedom and liberty in America.
I want to run this by you. I have heard a couple of witnesses before Congress let slip, or it may have been in two different contexts, that they had taken an oath of allegiance to George W. Bush, and it appeared to me this was an oath they had taken in lieu of their oath to support, preserve, and defend the Constitution. Have you ever picked up on anything like that?
Well, I heard something about members of the military being required to take an oath to the president, like that related to, when I joined it, it's 1980, so I'm pretty sure I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution.
Sure, of course. When I was commissioned in the Marine Corps, 62 to 66,
right,
you swore an oath very similar to that the president takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution.
Right, right. And I don't recall any, preserving, protecting, or defending the president or commander-in-chief being included in the oath that I took, but that's been a long time. But I've heard something about that being included in the oath now, but,
I have the feeling that this was some kind of rigged variation that was intended to create loyalty to the person who is occupying the office as opposed to the Constitution that is supposed to be the governing structure for the nation.
Right. And there has just been all kinds of effort to deprive people of knowledge regarding their rights and even what's going on. I mean, the whole secret vote counting issue, people are amazed that the votes are counted in secret and no one checks it.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Mark Adams. Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today has been very active in judicial reform, media reform, and election reform. His name is Mark Adams. And Mark, I'd like to take this last segment for you to tell us, talk about how these are related, because it seems to me they are related, and I just wondered if you might reflect on that.
Right. Well, I mean, certainly the reason we have freedom of the press is the founders wanted the people to be informed about what's going on in their government. And when you have consolidation that allows a little cartel to control the flow of information, which is what we have in America now, you have the people deprived of knowledge, which would cause them to demand an immediate reform to their judiciary and an immediate reform to their election system. Because once again, having talked to a couple thousand people doing exit polls this year, people are amazed that the government has a system in place where the vote's counted in secret and no one bothers to check on election day to make sure it's right. And in Florida, they have some ludicrous after certification random audit of a insignificant percentage of the paper ballots, and that's supposed to be the check. And we don't even know if that's a check yet, because it's in the new law that just went into effect with the August 2008 primary. Once again, how difficult would it be, and how much cheaper would it be to go back to just counting paper ballots in the precincts on election night? I think it would be much cheaper and much more reliable, and But with the press,
it creates much more of a sense of community too, because it's something
right.
you do together for the sake of the common good.
Right. But with the press harping on voter fraud, that gives people the illusion that the press and the government is paying attention to make sure the elections are conducted in a fair manner.
It was evident to me this was just a political ploy, another form of distraction a la Karl Rove to keep people from thinking about the real risk. I mean, it would require millions of instances of voter fraud to affect an election, whereas two or three hackers could make an enormous difference all by themselves.
Right. And so it was like you said, it's distraction. They're hiding the ball from the public. And that's, once again, it's because of the government allowing media consolidation to the point where we now have a media cartel, and they actually decide what they're going to cover and what they're not going to cover. And that's, once again, why today we don't see any meaningful discussion about the lack of coattails. And, I haven't even heard the word used. We have a situation like we have in Florida where, it's pretty obvious votes were stolen from Democrats in the congressional races yesterday, and, no real discussion except on, alternative press outlets like GNC.
I'm getting a report here, by the way, that Cynthia McKinney got something like a fraction of 1% of the vote. I mean, how is this possible?
Well,
A fraction.
Well, one of the things that they did, I represented Max Lynn, the Reform Party candidate for governor in 2006. And, we actually contested the governor's race. He didn't jump in on that. But, what we found is about, looking at our evidence we obtained, it looks like about 75-80% of the votes cast for him were flipped over to Charlie Crist, the Republican, and that gave him the win. And we're talking about 6-7% of the total vote being taken from the third party candidate and flipped to the Republican. And I think they routinely undermine the votes cast, the official count of the votes cast for third party candidates, because they want a two party system where it's much easier to control. Because if we had a third or a fourth party or a five party system, it'd be much more difficult for the powers to be to control all the politicians and all the parties.
Well, as long as the media is suppressing relevant information about what's going on, that the judiciary is under control, that all kinds of hacks are running the government, that they're looting our resources, that corruption abounds, the people aren't really motivated. And with electoral control, even if they were, they couldn't do anything about it. And as long as you have the judiciary under your thumb, then if illegal appeals are brought, they can be defeated effortlessly by corrupt judges.
Right. It's a real mess, Jim.
It really is, Mark. I mean, I think it's going to take someone of the ability of a Barack Obama to sort this out and maybe get a handle on the situation and do something to straighten it out.
Right, and, hopefully he will. I mean, hopefully there's enough, honest members of Congress like Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul and Robert Wexler. Hopefully there's enough of them that will push for some serious reforms. But right now we're in a situation because of the media's consolidation and everything that most of the people really have no idea, and they believe they're free. And one of the great philosophers of Western thought says, no one is more a slave than he who thinks he is free without being so. And that's the German philosopher. I'm going to probably butcher
it. Friedrich Nietzsche.
Well, it's actually the Goethe. Goethe, I'm sure a couple have said that throughout time because I see that right now. I mean, people think that there's liberty and justice in America, and yet if they have any interaction with the court system, they realize there is no justice and they're liable to lose their liberty, or even like I said, that of their children. And if people go to rescuemykids.com, they will see a case. A gentleman, Greg Palin, had his children stolen from him by the government based on false testimony. And he has documented about 40 other cases just in the Tampa Bay area. And once again, people don't realize that it's at the whim of a judge. A judge decides whether your children can be taken from you or not, and there's no jury. And that's absurd, and I don't think the founders would have ever allowed that. And my readings of the Anti-Federalist Papers indicate that the founders did not intend for judges to act and that in that situation, and that in fact the founders intended a jury to always stand between government action
a jury of our peers.
Right, a jury of our peers, because the founders understood that governments throughout history have been oppressors and have, mainly done bad things. And so you had to have a limited government. And the only way to limit the government is through actions and empowerment of the people.
Well, I certainly hope that Obama is the real deal and not just another side of the same coin, as you have suggested. I want to believe that the man actually has principles and has dedication to the Constitution and to the best interests of all the people of this country. And for that reason did I support him, and I'm going to be very concerned if we catch any indications that that's not the case.
Well, Bush has left him with an extraordinary mess, and I'm hoping that he's going to, work hard to clean up the election system and the judiciary, because those are the only ways we're going to restore liberty and justice and prosperity.
And reform the media as well, break down, use antitrust action to get divest some of these companies that own the television stations, the radio stations, the newspapers, number in areas so as to restrict the flow of information to the people.
And break the oil companies back up.
Mark, I can't thank you enough. You're doing such good work. I so admire those who are working in the electoral reform movement. You and Steve Freeman and Bev Harris and Bob Petraeus, you're some of my modern-day heroes. So I say keep up the great work, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Jim, and you keep up the great work, too.
I really appreciate it. Stand by, then. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. I want to thank you all for listening.